With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Thursday, October 19th. Coming up in today's show, what should be some priorities for selecting an alfalfa seed variety? Ryan German reports on that in a little bit, but first, NAFTA negotiators say they are frustrated by the lack of progress in the last round of talks that ended Tuesday. Here's Gary Crawford with more.
After four NAFTA negotiating rounds, 22 days total.
Frankly, I am disappointed by the resistance to change from our negotiating partners on both fronts.
U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Robert Lighthizer at the conclusion of round four Tuesday in Arlington, Virginia. That also seemed to be the general message from Canada and Mexico as well. Canada's Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland said that the idea of redoing NAFTA is to give wins for all three countries.
But that cannot be achieved with a winner-take-all mindset.
Lighthizer said the U.S. has two objectives. One, modernize NAFTA. Two, cut what he says is the $500 billion trade deficit NAFTA is causing for the U.S., and he told reporters.
We have seen no indication that our partners are willing to make any changes that will result in a reduction in these huge trade deficits.
Or as Mexico's Trade Secretary Guajardo put it,
we still have a lot of work to do.
Next round, November 17th through the 21st, Mexico City. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The forecast for this year's apple and pear crops offer a variety of information on production and price. Rod Bain reports.
Are you particularly preferential to palm fruits? You know, apples and pears. If so, you might have a mixed bag of news pertaining to this year's crops of these tree fruits. Now, if you are a consumer and connoisseur of apples, this year's U.S. apple crop is expected to be higher in production totals than most years since the start of this century. However, as USDA economist Agnes Perez notes,
we are looking at the 2017 U.S. apple crop at 10.4 billion pounds. This is down 7% from last year.
Perez says declines in major apple-producing states are behind overall lower production totals. This includes a forecasted 8% drop in Washington State, the leading apple-producing state, after coming off a bumper crop the previous year.
In Washington, the harvest is 2 to 3 weeks behind compared to last year, and probably with smaller fruit size.
And a 32% production decrease in Michigan due to a late spring frost and lower yield potential. Meanwhile, eastern U.S. apple states report production increases for 2017, such as Pennsylvania reporting an 11% year-over-year rise in apple production, and forecasts for Virginia's crop to increase 22% from the previous year. Perez adds a larger-than-normal supply of last year's apples will keep prices level initially in the 2017-18 marketing year. But eventually,
we anticipate that the smaller crop this year will help boost grower prices.
Despite this, the prices we pay for apples in the grocery store or supermarket should be favorable during the year due to the smaller crop. Now turning to the apple's palm cousin.
The latest forecast for the 2017 U.S. pear crop is for it declining for a fourth consecutive year.
With this year's crop production estimated at over 1.4 billion with a B pounds, a 4% decline year over year.
This year's production will be the smallest production reported since 1980, if realized.
While pear production increased in both California and Oregon for the nation's largest pear-producing state,
Washington State's production is forecast to be down 20% from last year.
One tidbit of note, more pears, around two-thirds of this year's crop, is going to the fresh market, including Bartlett's, the main processed pear variety.
Bartlett pears are still going to the processing, but there's an increasing share of Bartlett's going to the fresh market.
And with the lower production forecast for pears,
this is pointing to likely stronger pear prices during the marketing season.
Both for growers and for consumers at the retail level. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
With a focus on upgrading its digital footprint and connecting with consumers, the Pork Checkoff has launched a unique recipe partnership with the website and mobile app called Yumly. Yumly connects the right cook with the right food and recipes at the right time. Founded in 2010, today Yumly is a leading innovator in personalized recipes and meal solutions. National Pork Board Vice President of Domestic Marketing, Jared Sutton, says these partnerships are important.
You know, there's so many opportunities for us to engage with partners that can help us to really meet new consumers as well as existing wherever they are. And I think for us, it's really important that we're as we go through this shift, thinking about how to really understand who our best customers and consumers are, and then where they are, but also what their needs states are. And Pork has a portfolio of options to, you know, hopefully meet a lot of different consumers' need states. But, you know, we want to invest in understanding that better. And, you know, consumers will exhibit these buying patterns based on whatever those need states are. And so the more we understand what those need states are, the better apt we are for realizing some potential growth and innovation in the pork industry to fill a need. And so that's really exciting for us.
When consumers are shopping, Sutton says pork wants to be on that mental shopping list. That can be done with a new partnership.
One partner that has presented us with a great opportunity is Yumly. And Yumly is spelled just like it sounds, Y-U-M-M-L-Y. Yumly is a data set that captures recipes. That's probably the easiest way to describe it. And this is a really unique recipe partnership for the National Pork Board and Yumly, because what Yumly is it's a website as well as a mobile app. And, of course, we know that many consumers access a lot of information via their smartphones. And so Yumly works in that space as a mobile app. And they connect right to the cook with the right food and the right recipes at the right time. And so this Yumly partnership presents all kinds of cool opportunities for us as a pork board, a pork industry, to ensure that we're positioning our product and ideas for what to do with our product in front of the consumer before they even know that they're hungry. And I think that's one of the key selling points to this partnership.
Sutton says the Pork Checkoff will capture meal trends with the way today's cook is searching for information. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills,
our math, our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Feltz.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. ask them about leveraging the Silage Zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
Staying informed about the latest research and regularly communicating with other growers and PCAs are important factors when making a decision about which alfalfa variety to plant. Several aspects, such as fall dormancy, yield potential, and pest resistance characteristics, should be considered when selecting a particular variety. Shannon Mueller is an agronomy advisor for Cooperative Extension in Fresno and Madera counties. She advises against letting seed cost be the ultimate decision-making factor.
So I really try to encourage the growers to look at all of the other factors before they go shopping for seed. So they want to pull out the paperwork, pull out the data, look on the computer to look at the performance of the different varieties, select maybe their top 2, 3, 5 choices, and then go shopping for seed. Because the overall, over the life of a stand and looking at the productivity of the different varieties, the cost of the seed just really shouldn't be a factor in their decision making.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, national livestock groups are hailing the Department of Agriculture's withdrawal of the GPSA rule. USDA published their notice in the Federal Register announcing it would withdraw the interim final rule under the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration. With more on that story, here's Gary Crawford.
The Agriculture Department is dropping the proposed and controversial GPSA rule, which was a package of regulations that would have made it much easier for livestock producers to sue processors for unfair treatment.
The concern was is that this rule as proposed would lead to unnecessary and unproductive litigation in many ways.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue in Madrid, Spain, Tuesday, telling reporters in a phone hookup that dropping further action on the GPSA rule does not mean farmers are left without protection.
And we'll be watching to make sure that our producers individually and collectively are not disadvantaged.
Perdue said he's going to be meeting with industry producers and processors
to make sure that we treat one another fairly and not in a predatory fashion. These are moral actions that I don't believe that regulations and litigation actually solve. In fact, I believe that it had the potential for harming the very people that it was intended to protect.
So 9 years of discussion and controversy about the so-called GPSA rule are over, at least for the foreseeable future. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Thanks, Gary. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association called the withdrawal a victory for beef producers and consumers. The National Chicken Council said the rule would have opened the floodgates to frivolous and costly litigation while applauding the action. The National Pork Producers Council, which says it led the opposition effort against the interim final rule, said the organization was very pleased with the move. MPPC said an informal economic study found that the 2010 GPSA rule would have cost the U.S. pork industry more than $420 million annually. That's more than $4 per hog and added litigation cost. Now, while USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue's decision not to finalize the interim Farmer Fair Practices rule, it did draw immediate fire from Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. Grassley charged that big packers are taking advantage of independent hog producers through predatory practices, and in an unusual tirade against USDA and the Trump administration, vowed to protest USDA. But Grassley's wrath seemed unlikely to sway Secretary Sonny Perdue, who commented from Spain during a European Union trade visit this week, sided with the industry arguments that more regulation is not the answer. And wrapping up the fourth round of talks on the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, the U.S. has proposed a dismantling of Canada's dairy supply management system. Bloomberg reports Canada flatly rejects the proposal by the U.S. The proposal would effectively kill Canada's supply management system by fully eliminating tariffs on supply-managed products over 10 years. President Trump earlier this year called the system unfair and used the system as a part of his threat to withdraw from NAFTA. Canada's government dismissed the U.S. dairy proposal, while the Dairy Farmers of Canada called it outrageous. The U.S. proposal, according to Canada officials, would effectively end supply management. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Well, I do frequent updates on farm technology and how it has changed farming, but farmers were a little slow to start using electronic technology. You know, computers. Well, that's changing. The Department of Agriculture did an update on computer use by farmers a couple of months ago. According to that account, nearly 75% of today's farmers have access to computers. One thing the study showed is the use of computers on the farm is fairly steady, 75% of what it was 2 years ago. Crop producers seem to favor computers more than livestock producers, but just a little. Smartphones are finding a place among farmers, too. Most of the farmers who do not use electronic technology are small farmers. But even there, it's changing. And that's Ag Review for today. Everett Griner, AgNet West.
Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. Almond Board of California has invested in a comprehensive mapping analysis by LandIQ to improve the precision, accuracy, and transparency of information about the almond community. I talked with Joel Kimmelshue of LandIQ to get more on new information from the project.
Sure, Joel Kimmelshue. I'm a principal scientist with LandIQ.
All right, Joel. We actually spoke about a year ago.
It was, right.
And you explained what was going on with the almond layer map. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is an update to that, and can you start off with explaining to us what the update is and a little bit about what the map in general is?
Sure. So the map in general was intended to be a real enhancement in the acreage, not only just estimates, but also locations of individual orchards from the Almond Board of California, and it's intended to be what we call it a living map of California almonds. The map itself was originally published unveiled actually at the Almond Conference in 2016, and we've just conducted an update to the map on September 1st of 2017, and that update includes now the 2016 acreage for almonds statewide.
And this will be at the Almond Conference this year with the updated map?
Well, the updated map was unveiled. The updated statistics will be available at the Almond Conference, I believe, yes.
Okay, got it. So why is this important to the almond industry?
So for a good while, the almond industry and still continues to grow quite rapidly, and acreage is going in the state and a variety of different places throughout the Central Valley. That growth is very meaningful with regards to the need for marketing and environmental regulations and a variety of other attributes. And so it's very important to know actually not just the acreage of a highly accurate estimate of the acreage in the state of California, but also where those orchards are.
And is this something that will, I know that it depends on the partnership between your organization and Almond Board, but is this something that can continue to be monitored through the years to see how the industry changes as far as where the orchards are and how many acres there are?
Yeah, I believe it's the Almond Board's intent to continue to provide mapping of updates into the future. We've done mapping for the Almond Board, and you can see it on the web map itself at almonds.com/maps that include the years of 2010, 2012, 2014, and 2016 now with the update that was released on September 1st. And so the Almond Board has established a great kind of history of almond acreage and where those almond acres are in the state. And they've taken it kind of to the next level in that now we can overlay other spatial layers on top of the acreage, which include where groundwater recharge suitability may be best in certain almond orchards, overlay irrigation districts on top of the acreage, political districts, both California Assembly and state and U.S. congressional districts. And so the Almond Board is quite visionary with regards to how they want to interpret the information related to where almond orchards are and the extenuating circumstances that affect almond growers.
And so there's so much more to this than just seeing where the orchards are. Like you said, with the overlays, you can see all kinds of different, you can get a lot of different information that is extremely relevant to the almond industry.
Yeah, that's exactly true. And there are a lot more layers that the Almond Board is looking at now and releasing in this public format. Again, at almonds.com/maps, that will allow anybody in the world, actually, and to view the maps and those overlays and what may be of interest to them. Maybe it's political, maybe it's regulatory. We have an overlay of the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program Water Quality Coalition boundaries. I suspect there'll probably be some keen interest in the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act layers that will be coming out pretty soon through that regulatory process. And it's intended to be a tool that all growers, processors, handlers, anybody actually can view the relationship between where almonds are and other extenuating layers or circumstances that make a difference in their decision making.
So with the information that was just released in September, is there anything that really stood out or anything that you can share with us from that that was a good nugget of information, if you will?
Sure. So we all know that almond acreage continues to increase with about 98.5% accuracy. We now know that in 2016, there was 1.26 million acres of almonds planted in the state. It's quite interesting to log into the map and turn on, for example, the 2016 layer and the 2014 layer and to see where new orchards are and where orchards may have been removed and where growth is occurring. And you can turn on other layers as well as 2010 and 2012 as well. It's quite interesting to see those relationships and to look at things regionally.
And there's a lot of information here, but is there anything that I've missed or anything else that we should let the listeners know about?
Well, I just encourage everybody to use this publicly available tool that is for everyone to use. We track where people are coming from to use this. And it's not just folks in California that are looking at almonds. They're looking at from around the world. It's gained quite a bit of interest. We have over 1,000 or nearly 1,000 users now. And people just are really interested in kind of going spatial and wanting to know where these things are. So I encourage folks to access it when they can.
All right. I want to thank you for your time, Joel. I know that you're a busy guy.
I'm happy to do it.
That's Joel Kimmelshue with Land IQ. To find out more, you can head to almonds.com. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air. Your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills. Our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination. Our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. The 40th Annual Sunbelt Agricultural Exposition in Moultrie, Georgia, kicked off this week with 1,211 exhibitors on 100 acres with 600 acres of research farm. Chuck Zimmerman is there and has this interview on the latest from John Deere.
At Sunbelt Ag Expo, I'm visiting with John Deere, and I have with me John Doyle. And first of all, John, what do you do for the company?
I'm a product marketing manager for our utility tractor line out of the Augusta, Georgia.
Well, we're standing out here at your exhibit on the lot at the show next to a new model year 2018 utility tractor. Tell me a little bit about this model.
Well, Chuck, what we're here standing next to is we're standing next to our 5E three-cylinder tractor. We made an update to these tractors. We've had these tractors out for several years, but we made some changes that I feel like that customers are really gonna like on the tractors.
Yeah, how about for these farmers down here in the Southeast? What is it that's going to kind of attract them to, and what would be the main uses they would find for this tractor on their farms?
Well, these tractors are very versatile. They can do many applications. They go all the way from 45 horsepower all the way up to 75 horsepower. You know, we offer two different types of transmissions. We offer a 9.3 sync shuttle as well as a 12-12 power reverser. And we can also, in the 55, 65, and 75 models, we also offer a cab option and four-wheel drive. So, you know, those people that may have larger properties, you know, 20 acres to someone that's got maybe up to 100 acres, you know, you can move hay with it. You can, depend upon the horsepower you get in the bigger horsepower classes, you can pull a baler with it. You know, just a versatile tractor to help do, you know, run a rotary cutter, whatever.
I was going to say, probably get a lot of mowing out there if you need it.
Exactly right. Exactly. Yep. And then, of course, a loader. You know, tractors today, I mean, you know, a good percentage of our tractors do go or get loaders implemented on them just for that extra versatility around your property.
So this could be, like you said, very versatile. You could even have some livestock that this might have an application.
Absolutely. We sell these particular tractors in particular. We sell to our equine customers, people with horses. They want to move hay around, maybe clean out a barn, clip pastures. And then also with our cattle guys, they can use it to, you know, feed if they got a small cow-calf herd and can, you know, just use it as a versatile all-around tractor on their property.
Tell me a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned three-cylinder here, a little bit more about, besides horsepower, anything else that kind of sets this apart a little bit as a real handy tractor in this particular model range?
Well, I think the one thing about this tractor, there's a lot of things, you know, that we have built into these tractors that are maybe different than some of our competition. Our competition makes good tractors, but for instance, on these particular tractors, when you get into this size, you know, our weight, we weigh more. And so you don't have to add the extra ballast to be able. So if you had like a 6-foot disc behind this tractor, you know, another competitive tractor, maybe you'd have to add that ballast. That's additional cost factored into it. Another thing about these 5E3 cylinders is we offer a standard rear remote on the tractors where it's options on some other brands. You also get the electrical connection in the back. So you're ready to go ahead and do those versatile things, different types of implements and applications that were basically given to you right out of the factory.
What are the questions you get most often about this kind of a tractor from folks, especially at a show like this one?
Well, obviously, I mean, it always comes back to price, right? So, but, you know, I think, I guess I like to say it always comes back to, you know, it always is going to come back to price, but a lot of people don't ever think about what it's going to cost them. You know, so if you pay a little bit less for something, what are you giving up, you know, for that cheaper price? And so we try to talk about the value we've built into these tractors, like I said, with the, you know, the different, the more weight, which means horsepower to the ground. We talk about the standard features such as the rear SCVs, those kind of things. And then we talk about the versatility of the tractor. And then also, you know, you want to be comfortable as well in the seat. And that's what this model year 18, we've done some pretty good changes to these tractors. One, you want to be able to see. We lowered the front part of the hood down about 5 inches to give you more visibility out in front. The second thing that we did was we increased the size of the operator platform by about 20%, giving you more room, and we lowered it. It's more of a flat operator's platform. And we also incorporated a different seat to give you that higher back, or has a higher backrest on it to give you that some more comfort. One of the other things that we did on our previous models that we had is we actually had a mechanical throttle up on the dash. That's now been moved. It's been moved over to the right-hand fender where you have an electric throttle control there. Another thing was we also relocated and changed the loader joystick up just a little bit to give customers a better feel with when they're operating the loader.
So as a 2018 year model, what when will the opportunity be for some of these guys to place an order?
They can place orders right now. We've got these were introduced to our dealer network and customers in August, and dealers have been placing orders for them. And the orders for these tractors has I think exceeded a lot of our expectations, which is good. It's just a good all around tractor.
Well, thank you very much, John, for visiting with me here. I hope Deere has a great show here at Sunbelt Ag Expo this year. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.